awesome. Hey, watch it now!
Abracadabra.
Will you please stop drinking vodka at my kid's birthday party?
And then you got a freaking miracle. There you go.
Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. I hope Abracadamets are getting stuff done, son. Making things happen. Get out there and get your grind on. I know I'm grinding today. I am busy. Today is a busy, busy day. You know, sometimes I look at my cat Doris and I'm like, you know, why not me and you just switch places? You know, you try my life for a little while. I will do yours. You know, I can imagine hang around the house all day, lick myself, pee in a box. And then when I get really bored, I'll stare out the window and watch all my favorite foods run around the yard. That sounds horrible, actually. I tell you what, Doris, I'm good. I'm good with being busy. I'm good with my busy schedule. I tell you what, speaking of busy schedule, let me give a shout out with some upcoming show dates. July 23rd, I'm going to be at the 1907 Brewery in Morristown, Tennessee. You can, I still believe there's some tickets still available. I know they are selling up pretty quick. Go online to Eventbrite/Danny Whitson, and you can pick up your tickets there online, or you can buy tickets at the door if you're in the Morristown area. July 24th, I'm going to be in Bristol, Virginia at the Comedy Zone, and I know you can pick up tickets online for that show at the comedyzone/bristol.com. You definitely want to check that out. It's going to be a really good time. And this show just dropped. I'm going to be at the Stardome Comedy Club in Birmingham, Alabama, July 28th. So if you are in Birmingham, come out and see a show. We're going to have an abracadam good time. If you have not done so yet, check out the YouTube channel. This episode right here will be on the YouTube channel, at least 25 to 30 minutes of it, and you can get a good visual of this conversation, and there's some little funny little memes and funny little pictures that tend to pop up on the YouTube channel. So if you have not subscribed to the YouTube channel yet, be sure to search Danny Whitson Magic and Comedy on YouTube, Abracadam on YouTube, and definitely watch some of these episodes. But now let's get into today's sponsors. Okay. Well, today's episode is brought to you by Rosie Tattoos. Custom tattoos designed to suit your style in a friendly and clean environment. I've been getting my tattoos done by Rosie for a while now, and I couldn't recommend anyone else because she does excellent work. As a matter of fact, I got an appointment to see Rosie here in just a few weeks, and I cannot wait to get my ink therapy done, baby. Rosie gets free consultations by Facebook Messenger, Instagram, or by email. Shoot her an email at rosietattoos@yahoo.com. Give Rosie a call today at 865-281-3451 or go see Rosie at 5710 Kingston Pike, Knoxville, Tennessee. Get your ink therapy done. You know you want a tattoo. Go see Rosie Tattoos. I'm also excited to announce that the Abracadam Podcast has a new sponsor. Yes, this episode is brought to you by Liz's Wine and Spirits, located at 1505 Oak Ridge Turnpike, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Definitely, we all need to take the edge off sometimes, right? So I couldn't recommend a better place to go than Liz's Wine and Spirits. They literally have anything you're looking for. They've got it. Right now, they've got a special going on Old Smoky Moonshine and Frozen Head Vodka. And I got to be honest, I got to check out some of that Frozen Head Vodka. That sounds amazing. So definitely check out Liz and Wine Spirits on Facebook at Liz and Wine Spirits, or you can check them out online at lizandwinespirits.com. Give them a call at 865-483-5080. All right, Abracadamets. Now, today's guest is somebody who I'm excited to have on here, of course, But I could have probably have talked a lot longer than just an hour with today's guest, just because, I mean, he's a magician, and I've been familiar with the with today's guest for a while now. He has a lot of tricks out on the magic market. Really good stuff. Really good stuff. No filler stuff. Really good material out there. And he's also a fantastic entertainer. So I just got to say, I had a lot of fun talking with today's guest, and I think you guys will enjoy this conversation. So if you will, abracadamets, please sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with magician Bill Abbott. All right, I'm excited. We got Bill Abbott here today. How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing good, Danny. How are you, buddy?
Doing good, doing good. Bill, I'm super excited. I got you on the Abracadam podcast. You are a fantastic magician, well-known in the magic community, but will you please do me a favor and will you let my listeners know who you are?
I am Bill Abbott. I'm a magician. I've been a magician since I was 12 years old. I've been technically, officially a full-time magician since 2002. So it's been a few years. And in addition to performing, I also create and consult with other magicians and have created magic for all kinds of, you know, weird and interesting people and in weird, interesting venues.
You know, that is, you know, like a lot of magicians know who Bill Abbott is just based on a lot of your effects and products that you've put out on the market. You've got some fantastic stuff. You got some really good stuff out there. Actually, I was just talking about one of your routines today with another magician, the Smartass deck.
Oh yeah.
So, and that's like a killer. That is a killer. So it's almost become this, I think the Smartass deck in a way has kind of reached the level of the invisible deck for magicians, because
that's a praise indeed. Thanks.
That is a praise. And the reason why I'm saying this is because when magicians talk methods, okay, and I'm not going to go too deep here, but when magicians talk methods, I've several times people have said, well, you can always use Bill Abbott's Smartass deck to accomplish that. So with, like I said, it's became a normal thing that you may want to go to at normal, you know, in the world of magic, at least. So
it's I would agree. I mean, I don't think it's invisible deck status, but I definitely feel like it's got the notoriety, and also for pros that do live shows,
it's practical.
It's practical. Everyone knows it. Most of the guys that I know that are named guys have used it, and whether they use it just for like a TV spot or whatever, but they all have used it. And how about we begin, and I'll tell you a little anecdote. So that's one of the only effects that I've created strictly from a dream. I literally dreamt that effect and thought, okay, how can I do this? I had a weird dream. I was in a show and somebody was choosing cards, but rather than, you know, taking a card, they grabbed the whole deck and started throwing the cards and then got down to one. And that was really how the creation of that trick came about, because I woke up, I wrote it down in my journal, and I actually created the trick, you know, the method after the fact, which is, to be honest with you, magicians, if you've been in magic for a million years like I have, we kind of go method first and then create a presentation for it. This was one of the very few times where I've actually created an effect from a moment, for me it was a dream, but created the effect, and then the back end was to create the method to create it. But yeah, it's in every one of my shows. I mean, not that that makes a difference, but I mean, but it is one of those tricks that, like, I just feel it's so free and so fair and so clean, and especially it makes it entertaining for the audience to watch. It's one of those process tricks that doesn't feel burdened by dead time.
Absolutely. And that's another good thing about a lot of your stuff is it's, you can tell your routines are tested and done and they're entertaining. You know, right. You don't put out any pipe dream tricks, anything like that. You put things that are practical, and you could tell that, you know, well, this is something that a real worker will use. Now that's interesting though. I got to bring that back, because in a dream, you had a dream
And, you know, oh man, that's nuts. And now did you woke up immediately and wrote that, started working on it? It was that much.
No one will know this except other magicians, but I started with a Popeye Popper deck, which is a similar type of method to another forcing deck, except obviously the issue I had, and I actually performed with it. The issue I had, obviously, when people started tossing the cards around, is that they would separate, and the method became obvious if you didn't clean up right away or whatever. So, and that was my hurdle. And then basically I took it from that point and the 101 deck, or the 121 deck, or the Svengali style deck, even people that aren't into magic know it as Svengali.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They bought it in Las Vegas, or they bought it in, you know, at a carnival or something, or at a shitty flea market. But basically taking that concept of that forcing idea and then expanding upon it to make it just more free and more fair. And there's guys that have been done, Alex Hecklau has done his own version where he doesn't uses an ungimmick deck, which I like the concept. I'm not in love with the method, but I get the approach is great. I don't have it with me. I should pull it out, but I actually just made up a celebrity, a stack of celebrities. So it's 100 cards. So it's a huge deck. And the reasoning for that was, now I hand it to one guy, next guy, next guy. And so like I involve like 8 people in the audience to do the elimination phase. So the idea being that, you know, just involving more people. But yeah, again, it's such a fun thing to do.
Well, you know, let's talk about this listeners who aren't magicians, there is some magic jargon being around here, but
ten minutes of gobbledygook.
But let's talk about this, because this is what's real interesting about you, Bill, is let's talk about the creative process. Like, you had a dream and you woke up, I don't know, are you a Doc Brown all of a sudden from Back to the Future? He hit his head and he came up with these things. So but now, is there anything else, like, are there any things that you do to tap into the creative side of Bill Abbott, or is it just kind of things that just pop in your head?
Yeah, so a long time ago, I had a massive magic library that I gave away to a friend before I moved away from Toronto. And I now live in Florida, but I was originally in Toronto, Canada. And I was a very studious, not a studious performer, but a studious person in magic. I read every single book. Not only did I have my own library, but I had access to libraries people you wouldn't know, but people that had every possible magic book, known to the universe. And I spent years and years and years poring all over that shit. So I there was that background in the history of it that I think honestly kind of held me back in a way creatively, but also gave me a great foundation to know where I was coming from. And I'm not a huge historian of magic, but I do love history, and I love where magic has come from. So for me, it was like there was probably 10 years straight where I like literally read every book that I could get my hands on, and took, a myriad of notes, et cetera. And I had a very big library that I gave away sometimes I wish I had those books still. I think it's important. It's like every student, it's like every musical student. I've studied music as well. So I feel like you need to get the rudiments. You need to have a baseline of knowledge to spring forward from. Not that you can't invent from a void. You can just create stuff, but don't be surprised if it's been created before, though, which is inevitable. I feel, the cross contamination of like, but what I really love is having that foundation was really important to me. And it's not like I'm wealthy or that I bought all these books and like I was gifted them and stuff like that. But coming, you know, I would love to live in LA and go to the Magic Castle and access, you know, the Magic Castle library.
Oh gosh, yes. Yeah.
You know, stuff like that to me is like, you know, that would be like, but at the same time, like, I'm not in that mode anymore. I mean, I still love reading books, but I'm more into finding inspiration from outside of the magic world, because I feel like now I'm like, I'm not really going to come up with stuff, you know, out of a book anymore, but I am going to get influences from outside magic and use what the foundation of knowledge that I started with, which is really important.
Absolutely. You know, okay. I got to praise that, because, you know, that's where I am. You know, very hardly do I go to a book. Like, I've got the old books and I love the gems and, you know, the stuff in there, but I don't go there. There's other things outside of magic that influence the routines that I do now. Yeah. And nothing against it. And I'm with you, you know, like, there's a part of me would love to get lost in the Magic Castle library and just geek out, yeah. You know.
Me too.
But on the creative process, that's where I find a lot of my inspirations and ideas are outside of magic now.
Yeah.
I've heard fantastic things about your show. I have to admit, I have not seen your actual live show. I'm just familiar with your products.
Yeah.
But I've heard nothing but fantastic things. I've heard people say, you know, Bill's show is an original show. And when I can watch a magic show.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily have to be fooled to enjoy that show.
Sure.
But if I see something done originally by that person, if I see a bit of that person's personality in that routine, I'm hooked. I'm like, I love this. And I've heard nothing but fantastic things about your show.
Oh, that's great. I have no idea who you're talking to, but that's
I've just talked to a few magicians, you know, and I was like, you know, I've got Bill coming on the Abracadabra, and they're like, oh, cool. Yeah. Bill's great. Super nice guy. I was like, you know, I've seen, you know, Bill perform, you know, the smart ass deck routine. And I think,
sure.
You know, and stuff, but I said, I haven't saw that's his actual like show. And, you know what? I'll tell you who right off the bat, who I was speaking with, who saw you perform at House of Cards and said you killed it. And it was absolutely a great show.
Oh yeah.
House of Cards in Nashville.
I'm going to be there, last week in July.
Nice.
I'm going to be back there again. They finally reopened, and I mean, they've been open for a while, but they're now bringing back guests again.
I haven't performed at House of Cards, but I'm assuming he's probably like waylaid and overwhelmed with playing catch up right now.
Oh, I would imagine. Have you you've been in Nashville, obviously. You haven't been to House of Cards then? You haven't seen
it. Well, I went once when they very first opened.
Okay.
I met Jason Michaels, sat down with Jason Michaels at the time. And I was just like, this place is super nice. I was doing a show in Nashville and I was like, well, I'm here. I want to check this out. But I can't wait to get an opportunity to get in there. Now you're in Florida. What part of Florida are you in right now, Bill?
I'm in St. Augustine, which is just south of Jacksonville. It's the oldest nation. It's the oldest city in the nation.
Yeah. You're in like, everything's haunted in St. Augustine.
Yeah, yeah. Literally like, I could turn my computer like right of like from my front porch, you can see that there's a haunted lighthouse. It's right. On the ocean there. Yeah.
What you got to do, brother? Okay. You're in St. Augustine. You got to screw with these people. You need to get the thing and walk up and down the lighthouse, you know. Now, for you guys who are not familiar, the thing is another product, a magic product that Bill Abbott has put out. And it can be kind of creepy. It can be cool. Very cool though.
Yeah. That's it. I moved here. So I've been here. It's about 3.5 years I've been here. In St. Augustine. I mean, I vacationed here for about 7 or 8 years before we moved here, but I love it. It's such a gorgeous, I mean, you know, we're like a block from the ocean. Plus the town is like such an amazing, so much history, so much, you know, just.
They got a lot of magicians in St. Augustine.
I'm friends with all of them. There's not a ton, surprisingly. I mean, I'm friends with a bunch of them, and there's obviously a bunch in Orlando and beyond that I'm really good friends with. So, I mean, there's a really great magic community here, which is awesome. And It's St. Augustine's kind of a bizarre place. I'm actively trying to nail down a venue to do a show here, like a regular show.
Nice.
Which is, you know, that was the whole point of moving here. It's just taken me a long time because we've been so busy, our regular business of, you know, providing people like Danny with magic tricks.
To providing wonders.
Providing wonders to perform.
Let's do this because you mentioned Canada. And, you know, it's weird. I've had a lot of Canadians on this show now.
Really?
Name some. Crazy Canadian. What is his name? Sean Farquhar. That guy. Oh, yeah. that guy. And also Ryan Stacey. He's a UFO private investigator.
Oh, that's cool.
Really cool.
Is he in the East Coast? Where is he? Ryan Stacey. That sounds really familiar.
Ryan, no.
I'm a UFO, a bit of a UFO nut.
Well, he used to be over MUFON Canada.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He left MUFON and he started his own organization called TESSA, where he kind of focuses on the experience. I was a big skeptic, of course, because we're magicians. We don't believe anything fun. You know what I mean? So I was a big skeptic and I was like, I hope this guy's not batshit crazy. And I brought him on the podcast and I got to learn some about him. He actually started out as a private investigator and he really looks at things from a skeptical anyway.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
So I had him back on the second time. And because with all the stuff going on right now with UFOs, super exciting times. Really, so I had to talk to him. So, he's from Canada. Sean, Canada. Did I have another guy from Canada? I can't remember. Well, Bill Abbott. There we go.
Bill Abbott.
And let's brag about Canadians for a minute, because I tell people this in magic all the time, because no one has a clue. It's insane what Canada puts out talent-wise for magic. True. You know?
Yeah, if you go way back in history, I mean...
Di Vernon,
who influenced magic, you know, dramatically from very early time. You know, he created the idea of being natural, which being natural with magic, which really influenced when you think of like David Blaine and making magic, you know, making magic relevant, making magic real, not some guy on a stage with some boxes. It was a guy who was doing magic on the street or magic, you know, that with objects that people could identify. And it was like, oh yeah, he just took a spoon off my counter and did some, you know, that was Di Vernon's. That was his whole theory, not theory, but his whole philosophy was like making magic natural. And I feel like, you know, to be honest, I don't, you know, And with Doug Henning, another famous
guy. Doug Henning's another one, absolutely.
Who made magic hip and cool, because back then, before Doug Henning, it was guys in 3-7-piece suits, you know, and bow ties and whatever, doing very regimented, strict thing, where this guy comes out and he's like in bell bottoms and a t-shirt doing magic. And like, everyone's like, what the hell is this? And we've never seen this before. And that again, propelled magic into, you know, and that was back in the 70s and the early 80s, that propelled magic into the now. And I think, and obviously that influenced Copperfield went from there and did the same thing, but it was like, it took Doug Henning to propel that into that direction, obviously. And there's a million famous magicians. I mean, Shin Lim is a Canadian, originally Canadian. Shin Lim is a Canadian. Trying to think of other Murray Sawchuk. There's a Bill Abbott. There's Sean Farquhar. There's a lot of great magicians. Honestly, though, that are that have influenced not only are magicians, but have influenced magic in a very deep way, which is cool. I mean, it's probably because we have a lot of time on our hands in Canada, and there's it's cold about 9 months of the year, so we have a lot of indoor time. We have a time to think and create
that. You know, that's the other thing, and people always say Canadians are always super nice, and I don't know if that's true, but I will say this: it's a good stereotype to have.
There's no argument.
And also though, I've never met a person from Canada that I didn't like, You know, I've met plenty of people from the U.S. that I can't stand, but I've never met anybody from Canada I didn't like. And you know, not just, and another thing I'll say also that's great about Canada is, like, you guys got the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival up there.
Great.
I do a lot of comedy clubs, and you know, I love Canadians' approach to humor. It's also, it's a little different too. You know, are you a fan of the show Letterkenny?
Of course. It's part of, it's a law. Yeah, it's a great show.
It's a great show. Yeah. And I mean, and also,
it's quintessentially Canadian. I mean, I, you know, as is Trailer Park Boys,
Kids in the Hall,
Kids in the Hall, which is, that's my favorite show.
Me too.
Corner Gas, which is my parents' favorite show. You know, they're all quintessentially Canadian. You can't turn them on. Like, we're in America. You can watch a comedy. It's like, I mean, you can say it's like very LA, but it's at the same time, it's like they're doing a very broad feel, where in Canada, it's like, it feels so regional.
You know, so it's like, Canada, baby.
Yeah. And you know where in Canada it's from. It's like, you know, like Brent Butt and Corner Gas, like, you know, that's middle Canada. Like, that is quintessentially, you know, the prairies in Canada. Like,
it's, you know, hilarious. One of the highlights of my life is, you know, I do sketch comedy too. And I was, Kevin McDonald was coming to town.
So great.
And he had put out like a casting call, cause he was doing a show. Mm-hmm. And so we had to show up. We had to show up with our sketches. And I had a sketch I'd wrote a couple years ago, and I was like, well, what the hell? I'll see what I can do. And I had to stand in front of Kevin and read my sketch, and I'm scared shitless. You know, I'm just, this is Kevin Hall from, you know, I mean, Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall, you know? Yeah. And I read my sketch, which I just thought was, you know, of course you think it's garbage. And Kevin says, you know, there's no way you could have known this, but we literally had a sketch very, very similar to that that never made it to the show.
Wow.
You're in the show. And I was just like, wow. So, you know, I got to work, you know, one night with Kevin McDonald, awesome. You know, on a live sketch show. But it was actually, it was called the, I had wrote about a drunk superhero who really doesn't have any superpowers. He's just a drunk. And he goes by the name The Flask. So
that's great.
Kevin loved it. But anyways, Kids in the Hall, Canadian humor, man, I love it. And now you have humor in your show, though, too.
So I started, I guess I started when I was a kid. And we used to go to church every Sunday. And then after Sunday night, you know, it was a big deal. My parents ordered pizza, which is, you know, whatever. And then we would imitate everybody who went to church. So we would imitate, you know, adults, kids, whatever. And we would, that became like a regimented thing. So every Sunday night it was like, oh yeah, we're going to make, it wasn't even, we didn't call them imitation. We were just like pretending to be people. And then I guess from there, like we were raised on 16 millimeter movies we used to get from the library. My dad used to get a projector and stuff, and we used to watch, you know, Marx Brothers and Laurel and Hardy and Chaplin. And so I was indoctrinated in that early comedy stuff. And then when I started out in magic, when I was in mostly in college and university, but like just out of high school, I couldn't find venues to try tricks out on. So I just started doing open mics at every single open mic. And it would be an open mic, it'd be like a weird open mic at a coffee house where everyone's a musician and you're a magician going out doing, you know, everyone's like, he's talking to us. They don't know what, you know, it's like, which is really good because nobody knows what the fuck you're doing. And it's like, people are really legitimately shocked. And also you can really hold their attention because they're like, no, we weren't expecting this. We were expecting Sally to do her rendition of, you know, whatever the birds or something. But it taught me a lot about comedy was the easiest way in to winning over an audience. And that was, you know, in to this day, that was the way to do it. You can show them a trick, but instantly they're like, oh, it's a puzzle. We need to figure this out. But if you have a joke and a joke and a joke and then a trick, it becomes, the trick is becomes the surprise party in amongst the jokes.
Absolutely.
So for me, I don't remember the question, but the point was for me in growing up in magic, I realized very quickly that, especially in Canada, where people were like, they were impressed by the tricks, but they weren't entertained by the tricks. It was like, oh, I need to add more to this. I need to add not only my personality, but several jokes, and then try to, and original stuff too. And that, you know, friends of mine, Richard Sanders and David Acker and.
Oh gosh. Oh man. You just named some, that's some other Canadians, by the way, that are giants, by the way.
Yeah. So they were all buddies and they all were very focused and very, not legalistic, but very like, it's gotta be original, buddy. Don't, it can't be some shit that you heard somebody else say. You have to, it has to be about you. It has to be about the environment. It has to be about whatever you're going to do, but it has to be original. You can't just, you know, pick and borrow shit from other people. It has to be stuff and jokes, not only jokes, but magic that was original. And that really challenged me in a good way to make it mine and to make it real for me in front of those audiences that, you know, didn't know me, didn't know, you know. And then when I did open mic nights with other comics, I was also fighting a battle with comics because I would pull out a deck of cards and start doing trick, and they'd be like, oh, here goes rock comic. Yeah. Here goes Carrot Top. You know, it's like, yeah. So I needed to not only be original comedically, but also magically to make the comedy with the magic fit. And that was, you know, those are important lessons as a kid.
You know, absolutely. And, you know, the other thing that people sometimes they think that comedy and magic just go so perfect together, but actually not. I disagree, because I think good comedy is telling the truth and good magic is bullshit. So to make truth and bullshit work together, it's a challenge. It is a skill, and it can be done. You know, it took me a while to figure it out for my show, but I feel like I've got it, you know, to where it works. But, yeah, it really takes a true skill to do true comedy magic.
Yeah, to balance it and to, you know, it's funny. It's like there's a lot of shitty magicians that do comedy. And there's a lot of shitty comics that do magic. And, you know, and I mean that sincerely. I don't mean that as
that's just true. Though it's the truth.
A joke, but it's also truth. And I feel like I've actually over the past even two or three years tried to up the magic level to match my comedy. I know that sounds, it's going to sound incoherent to anyone who doesn't know what I'm talking about, but basically I think the jokes have to be on par with the magic. And whether that's, you know, making the jokes as, you know, as funny or the magic as powerful, but you know, as a comedy magician or whatever you want to call yourself, even in the past year in performances I've done, I now try not to step on the magic with a joke that discounts the magic moment that everyone's kind of enjoying and kind of like, oh, how'd that happen? And then Magic Man says a joke and I laugh and it destroys a little bit of the wonder for me. So like now I'm trying to calm down with the jokes after a really powerful piece of magic. Just let it rest, you know, and then pick up a little bit later, but not try to, you know, try to become kind of a real magician where you're doing like some real magic where people are like, oh my gosh, I don't know how he did that. I don't know. And then, because we, you know, as comedians, we don't want dead air. I mean, Silence scares the hell of us. Out of us. We're magic. There needs some pause, and there needs some, you know, the most powerful thing as a magician is to do a trick and have silence. Yeah. We try to juice applause. We're kind of juicing jokes. The reality is like when people are really shook, they're like, oh, what? And they're, you know, the best moment is when they're looking at each other. Like, did I just see what you just saw? Did you just see that? And that's the moment I feel is like, that's the most powerful. Stop ruining that. I'm talking to myself, not you.
But no, you're right.
That moment. Like, you're right. Let that happen. But again, you have to be listening to your audience. That's the key to, you know, as you know, I mean, yeah. It's not.
That is so true, though. That is so true, because what some of the most strongest moments, and now I even have to do this. I even have to do this because I think, you know, I want to give magic respect that it deserves and the magician the respect that it deserves. And you kind of mentioned earlier about how, you know, comedians can be, you know, jerks towards when the one magic guy shows up with his props. Yeah. I even said most of my friends, Bill, are comics. Most of the people who I know are comics. So I've been that magic guy showing up amongst the comics, you know, I've been that dude. But there also becomes this way of thanking me where you're like, you know, the comedy's going good. So now let me go over here and shit on the magic. You know, and no, yeah. You don't have to do that. And yeah. Also, I don't think audiences really want us to do that, really. You know, a lot of times if they're there to see a comedy magician, I think they want to laugh, but then they also want to enjoy that magic. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think there's also like there's a reality that I don't think a lot of magicians, maybe they do eventually, but I feel like there's like, you know, there's comedy rules. In magic, there's rules, but it's not really enforced. No, not enforced. And also not, you kind of realize it later on as a professional, quote unquote, whatever, like once you start doing gigs and start doing gigs for people and getting out in the real world, is like, you realize, oh, there's a whole other world of, you know, which is very similar to comedians and the rules of comedy, which is, you know, obviously original material and being true to the jokes and also being true to yourself. I think magic has all those things, but it's like, it's unwritten. So there's like a smaller number of people, I feel, you know, as professional magicians who like, they, you know, you learn it by osmosis almost, like over time.
Absolutely. Well, you know, okay. I know exactly what you're talking about. There are some of you guys out here, you know, and there's some performers that I can't stand to watch. And this is the reason why. Not because I dislike them. I see some of them are so good that I think I get jealous. And that's a compliment.
Sure.
But when I see their act, I'm like, why did I not think of that, you stupid loser? You know what I mean? So it's like, I will admire you from a distance and I will hear good things. But, and I love to see those guys. I love to see that kind of creativity out there performing because I think it gives us a good name. Now, this is something else. What do you think about this? We do have plenty that we just mentioned one of the platforms for magic, House of Cards, and there, you know, there's a Magic Castle. But I kind of really wish that comedy magicians, real comedy magicians, not some guy cracking a joke in between his sponge balls, real comedy magicians, I wish there was more platforms for us to perform like there is for traditional stand-up comics. You know, they could literally go to any town and find a stage. You know, you said you had to go to the open mic, you know, to get your practice, and where a lot of us, you know, I found a comedy club and, you know, worked out my craft. But I mean, it would be nice if it was more popular, you know, I guess variety comedy magic type clubs.
Yeah. That's a good point. I feel like it's tough because magic is such a novelty, and also it's very few and far between. It's like, you know, as a guitarist, you're one of 10,000 in your little county or town.
Yeah.
You know, as a magician, you're literally one of three guys, maybe, you know,
maybe.
And, you know, and comedians similarly, where there's like, there's 100 guys getting to comedy and there's one magician. So it's a hard sell in a comedy club. It's also, I mean, you can do House of Cards, you can do other magic venues, but you kind of gotta you got to dress in a suit and tie. You got to, you know, there's a certain decorum that unless you reach that thing, it's like, and I've done all these venues. I've done, you know, there's a Chicago Magic Lounge. I've done Smoke and Mirrors wherever that is, Pittsburgh, I guess. And then there's, you know, I've done all those venues and I feel like you can sneak all of that, all of what you do in, but there is this sort of like magic to, you know, for people to pay for magic, the guy's got to be in a suit. You know, it's like, if there's is that kind of vibe. And I feel like there, I mean, there's the Comedy and Magic Club in Hermosa, which I haven't performed in, but that is, you know, they do.
Well, that would be the closest thing to it. Correct.
Friendly to magicians and comedians. So it's like, that's the happy medium, but there's not a lot of that. I would agree. There's not a lot of that, those venues that.
Well, you know, I've booked a show here right outside of Knoxville, Tennessee for 5 years in stand-up comedy shows at a small theater. The comedy club that my home club in Knoxville closed years ago. And yeah, I thought, well, you know, I want to try to provide a stage for comics coming through this area. So we, you know, me and my wife started booking the small theater. But now, you know, I always feel like, because I am a novelty act, whether I like it or not, I'm prop scum, I'm magic scum, and I feel like I need to do a service to my brothers and sisters, you know what I mean? So right. I'm probably going to start, you know, moving towards the direction of trying to book more comedy magicians, but I not crappy ones. So if you're a crappy comedy magician, sorry, pal. But,
sorry, you're
yeah. Good. But no, I mean, you know, I would just like to see more platforms for that. And but now that's something else also weird about magic versus any other performance art. I mean, not any other, but I mean, we have to wear a suit and tie. We have to dress a certain way to play this gig. Comics don't do that. Musicians surely to hell don't do that. What's that about? What do you think?
I think it's a longstanding tradition of, I'm sure ballerinas are like, do I have to put these shoes on again? Do I? It's like, oh God, it's like, do we all have to do this? You know, I don't know. I don't know. It's leveraging commerce with our art, you know, with art. It's like, you know, we want you to do what you want to do, but we also need you to do this. So that you can, you know, be the image of what we need you to be. And I feel like that's, I mean, that's in every, there's a million industries like that. You know, it's like, you know, whether you're a real estate agent or a lawyer, yeah. Or it's like, I just want to wear flip flops. Like, well, it's not going to look good in court, you know?
Flip flops, I can see. I'm not wearing flip flops. But now, you know, this is something to think about, Bill. I think this is a good point. This just popped in my head. We talked about this guy earlier, and he most certainly didn't fit the norm. And Doug Henney. Doug Henney looked like a hippie tripping on acid. And nothing at all like a traditional magician. So I don't know, man. Maybe I think there's something to be said about not following the magic.
Well, okay, so let's go back in time, not as far back as Henning, but let's go back to David Blaine. So here's a guy in whatever, jeans or whatever, in a t-shirt doing magic on the street, which looked great on camera.
Absolutely.
Now, bring that guy to the... to the cocktail party where people actually paying money, you know, to have him at the business event or whatever. And the guy's in his t-shirt and his jeans and he walks, you know, he comes and starts doing, you know, card tricks. It's like, it didn't fit because, well, first of all, it might've fit because if it was David Blaine, they knew it was him.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it's like, it was like having a job interview every 5 minutes. Like, well, this guy's really good. I know he's dressed this way, but we got to figure this out. It's going to be great. The magic is good. You know, it's like, I feel like, okay, so I've always felt when I did kid show magic, I dressed like an adult. I didn't dress like a clown. And, you know, David Kay, Silly Billy is a good friend of mine. He comes out like a clown. So he looks like he's ready for a kid show. I came either in a suit or a bow tie or whatever, but I looked like a, I looked like an adult. And I always felt that it was funnier that an adult was doing stupid things than when a guy who was dressed like a clown doing stupid things, because you expected that from a clown. You didn't expect that from a guy that looked like an adult who knew what he was doing, or a parent, or a whatever. And I feel like similarly, maybe magic, you can be really funny, but look like you are in control of everything because you put a suit and tie on. But the reality is, like, it's chaos and your mind is blown and you're not, you know, normal. And I feel like, you know, I mean, look at, I mean, going way back in time, look at Monty Python. Those are guys in like suit and ties who are doing asinine, incredibly ridiculous things.
Absolutely. Great.
Like, you can break through. I mean, that's the beauty of comedy, is that it literally can be, you can look like a normal human, but be a raving psychopath. And that's what makes it fun. I mean, look at
well, Tommy Cooper, you know, Tommy Cooper.
Tommy Cooper. Exactly. Look at Tony Brent from The Office, or look, yeah, at, like, those are guys that, like, oh, he looks like a professional business person. Meanwhile, he's a seething lunatic, you know, and that's what made it funny.
That's a great point.
I don't feel that it's predominantly about the costume, unless it's like a juxtaposition from, he looks like this, but he's crazy. He's dressed like a priest, but he's a crazy, he's at an orgy. You know, it's like that type of divergence makes it interesting, I feel, anyways, and makes it interesting. So I'm not as hung up. Like, I've done gigs at all these, what we would call posh places, but I still do the same material. I still do what I want to do. That's, I just dress the part so that they think, well, he's got nice shoes and a tie on. He's like, he obviously knows what he's doing. He's obviously a pro. Meanwhile, I'm making crazy jokes about everything.
Okay, well, let's do this. And by the way, great points. I totally see what you're saying. But let's do this. On the Abracadam podcast, yes, Bill Abbott, we ask every guest a hell gig story.
Okay.
Let's hear a good one.
Okay, so let's rewind. And I'm going to go back to my... I'm going to say I was in my... late teens, early 20s. I couldn't tell you the year, but I had been doing these corporate gigs and basically hired out by an agency. So the agency would send you to these corporate gigs at Christmas time. So it would start in mid-November and go all the way up till Christmas Day almost. You'd be doing shows, and sometimes I'd be doing two or three shows or four shows a day. You know, especially on the weekends, it would start Friday, we'd do two or three shows, Saturday, Sunday, you know, Sunday up until Sunday night. And then it would start up again, like maybe Wednesday, Thursday, and you'd be doing one, two, three. But then by the weekend, you'd be doing like 8 to 9 to 10 shows. So this is one of those shows. And this was a Sunday. I distinctly remember it was a Sunday afternoon. And this agency sent me a rider with very specific instructions for me that said, you are to do your show and introduce Santa Claus in the basement of this church, but it was a Catholic church. This place was huge. This was, and there was 500 kids in this audience. It was that big. So it was 500 kids in the audience and then all their parents on the outside, you know, of the floor area. So it was like probably 1,000 people, maybe. It was a big, very big place. So, but they gave me very specific instructions. You need to introduce Santa Claus. And on stage, so it was like, imagine like a high school auditorium stage, which was like 5 feet up from the ground. So I actually performed on the ground level, but then on stage, there's this box, which you will probably know as a tip over trunk, but basically it was a production box to produce Santa. So you're going to produce Santa at the end of the show. You're going to produce Santa. He's going to hop out of the box after you produce him, sit in his chair, and then give out gifts to the kids. Okay. So now I'm supposed to meet with Santa before my show. Santa never shows up. I'm waiting. There's a side door that kind of goes to the parking lot from the stage area, obviously like a load in for people that were bringing in stuff. So for half an hour before my show, I kept running out, seeing if the guy's there. He never showed up. So it comes time for me to do my show. Everyone's seated. There's literally 500 kids. I do my show. So I did my 45 minute set and the kids are all, entertained, had a good time. So then right after my show, I'm now in panic mode trying to, okay, I need to find Santa. I need to put him in this box. So I had, before the show started, I pushed the box backstage so that he could get inside the box. And then I push it forward through the curtains, through the split in the curtains, and then produce him. I go backstage at the end of my show. Can't find him. Now, just at the end of the show, I said, hey, I'm going to go find Santa. Give me a minute. Go backstage. He's not there. I go to the parking lot. He's not there. I call the agent. So I'm on the phone with the agent. He's like, he's on his way. He just came from another show. He's going to be a little bit late. Okay, fine. I come back out. And at this point, the kids are all like looking around. They're like very excited for Santa. I go on the mic and say, Santa's almost on his way. He had a little issue with the reindeer. He finally got the sleigh in gear. He's going to be landing on the roof in a minute. We're going to bring Santa out in a second. Finally, so then, the kids are all, still excited. I run out to the parking lot. This guy pulls in in a Honda Civic. And literally, he opens the door. He's hammered beyond ball. Like he's soused. This guy is tight. Beyond all belief. So he doesn't get out of the car. He literally rolls out of the car. He just rolls sideways and rolls onto the pavement. And I'm like, I can't, this is not happening. Now he's mostly in his suit. So he's got his suit on, but he hasn't got his beard on. So I finally get his beard on. I find his hat. And he's like trying to grab his flask. I'm like, no, you gotta. There's literally 500 kids in there that want to see you. You can come back to this, but we need to go in there now. I lead him in. He starts walking onto the stage and I pull him back and say, dude, I'm supposed to produce you from the magic box. He's like, what are you talking about? He had no idea that I had to produce him from this box. So we go backstage. I said, all you need to do is sit in there. Just get in this position. And he's like, yeah, okay. So he's like there and he's like burping and farting and like, he's out to lunch. So I split the curtain. I push the box through. And by this time, the kids are all chanting, Santa, Santa, like they're going nuts. Santa's coming. I push him forward. I flip the box over. He does not, there's a partition that he's supposed to be behind. He's not behind it. I tip the box forward. All they see is Santa in a fetal position, all crumpled up. And they're like, and the whole place erupts like, Santa! Like they freak out. They're all going nuts at this point. Like, it's Santa, I can't believe it. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I flip the box back and I say to the guy, I open the lid and I say, get up. So he clambers up. You have to understand how hammered this guy is. He's like, and all the kids are like screaming at this point. So this whole contraption, this whole tip over box production thing, it's on casters. That's how I'm rolling him forward. And like, he steps up onto the edge of the box, steps forward. Like he's just going to walk onto the stage. The whole thing slides out from under him. He does a full face plant, boom, right on the stage. He's out, like he's winded. He's out of. He's like, so I'm like, Santa, are you okay? I bring the mic down. He's like, he's out. He's like literally out of. He's out to lunch. Kids are like, and there's like dead silence. The kids are like, they think Santa's dead. Santa's died. I grab the throne, the chair that I swing it over. I get him into position. And I'm like, okay, so I'm going to talk for Santa. And I just said, Santa's gonna pull out his list. Of course, he doesn't know anything. He just figures he's supposed to show up and just look like the part, but he has no idea. He's supposed to announce kids' names. It's awful. So, anyways, long story longer. Basically, he was out of commission. Like he couldn't breathe. He could barely breathe. Oh. And I just pretended I was his helper and pulled out.
And you know, how old were you, Bill?
I was probably 19 or 20.
Gosh,
yeah, dude. It was like crazy. And I've done other things like it before, but this was in particularly a crazy gig because I wasn't used to doing this type of thing, first of all. And second of all, this guy was hammered, didn't know he was supposed to do a magic trick before the thing. The agent had obviously, you know, the agent upsold all of it. Yeah, we're gonna bring Santa.
Of course.
Gonna be magically produced by the magician. The magician's gonna do, you know, so you know, the agent's like, he's like sold them all these things. He's making $5,000. He's paying the magician $100. He's paying Santa $50 and a Mickey of bourbon or whatever. So it's like crazy show central. So it was a nightmare. It was a nightmare partly because of my age. Because I didn't know how to deal with it.
Gosh, I couldn't imagine dealing with that at 19 or 20 years old.
But it was fun. I mean, it's fun now talking about it. But
well, you had your very own Billy Bob Thornton Bad Santa. So
you literally, in the flesh. Yeah. Yeah, it was
that
crazy.
That is awesome. I love that. That's a great hell gig story. Well, let's do this since we're moving right along. Yep. Let's do this. I've got a question for you. Okay. And this is going to be a thinker. All right, you're going to have to do, this is the thinker. Bill Abbott, let's say that you are stranded on a tropical island.
Beautiful.
You wake up, you don't even know how you got there. You wake up and you're on a tropical island, and then you notice about 1,000 spears pointing at your neck, mm-hmm. and you see the indigenous people that live on this island. Now, you have to convince these people not to kill you.
Yep.
You have to convince these people that you're a god.
Yep.
There's one magic trick that you can perform to try to convince these people. It can be any magic trick at all in your repertoire. What magic trick do you perform?
Okay. So I would do a version of a trick that I do impromptu, so I could literally do this anywhere in a tropical island. I could do it as well without any props. I would just gather what's in the vicinity,
some rocks,
I would get some wood, and I would get some fire, and I guess fire exists on the tropical island, but I basically do a version of my ashes on palm trick that I do. And that's a trick that I do.
That's a classic.
It's a trick that I do drunk at bars and nightclubs. It's a trick that I do sober at venues. It's one of those tricks that like has such a primal reaction to the effect that I would do anywhere. And there's no language barrier, first of all. So you don't have to have someone specifically, you know, think in English or anything like that. You can do it totally in any language. So that would be my tropical island. So let me tell you, I'll explain the effect for people that don't, you know, understand what I'm talking about. So basically I would have someone in the audience, but in the tribe,
the jungle,
make a fist with their hand and then hold it over their heart. That's important. And then in that moment, I would then, with my own hand, I would then take a burning lit match or a spear but a torch or something like that, and rub and hold the fire over my hand, and then and enact the idea that I'm throwing that heat or that energy to the hand that's over their heart, and when they open their hand, they see a big black ash in the center of their palm. And to me, and I've done this, and
I hear the reactions though. Ooh.
Yes, right. And that's the whole thing. It's like, it's frightening them into submission. I think that trick personally would do the trick. That's
That would save your life. They would be toting you around, Bill Abbott. People would be like, what happened to Bill Abbott? Has anybody seen Bill? And but you're on this island and just eating fruit and living the life.
That would help. That would definitely, seal the deal initially. At least get me going into becoming a god on the island.
You know what? I think, I'm going to go on a limb here. Because I've asked a few magicians that question. That's my favorite answer so far. Right there. Yes, it's my favorite answer.
I haven't listened to your podcast enough. I will now. But is there any specific answers that that stand out to you? Because I'm interested to
Nick Lewin.
I need to listen to your podcast more.
That's Nick Lewin. Bill's like, I have no clue what the Abracadam is. But Nick Lewin said he would do the ambitious card. So, but Nick's got that likable personality.
You would need to have a deck of cards. I'm assuming that you don't have anything.
That's true.
I've done that same trick at resorts in Mexico, and I just borrow a cork and then burn the end of the cork, and that can produce the ash. And I've done that like at a resort.
Yours is my favorite. Dana Daniels. I had Dana just recently on here, and Dana's doing. He's vanishing rocks. So. Those are the two that just off the top of my head that stick out. But right now, I really like yours. I really, really like your answer. I really do.
So consider that stolen if you ever get stranded on it.
I'll be like, Abbott. Ding. There we go. I tell you what, man, Bill, this has been awesome. Really, I've really enjoyed this conversation. Before we get out of here, though, let the listeners, where can they see Bill Abbott?
Well, right now you can see Bill Abbott at BillAbbottMagic.com. That's my website where I share a lot of my creations. And the stuff that you see on there has been on America's Got Talent, Britain's Got Talent, Asia's Got Talent. It's been on Penn and Teller's Foolist. It's been on NBC.
It's been everywhere.
Netflix, Disney Plus. It's been on, every single, as well as shows up and down the Las Vegas Strip. So there's magic there. I also consult. So if you want to get in touch with me to create original magic for your show or for your TV appearances or your TV specials. And also I am hoping to launch to a show soon in St. Augustine, and that will probably be on the same. I'll definitely be plugging it at
BillAbbottMagic.com
as well.
Well, here, okay. Now, also, you said you're going to be at House of Cards again.
Yes. So,
Do you have a date?
Let me pull up the my calendar here. So, I'm there in the end of July, July 26th. Actually, July 28th is my first show. July 28th till August 1st. So that whole 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 dates, I'm there at House of Cards.
Well, there we go. Then they can definitely, if they're in that area, they can definitely check you out there in Nashville.
And let me know, because even for yourself, if you, I can get you on the guest list at least, sneak in.
Awesome.
Because it's not cheap. I mean,
it's not cheap.
For the average human artist.
And I'll have to wear my suit. So
you might have to put on underwear.
Well, I tell you what, Bill, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the Abracadam podcast.
Thank you, my friend. I had a really good time. I actually enjoyed myself. I wasn't sure at first, to be honest, but now I had a good time, and I'm excited to listen to the other ones. I'm excited.
Awesome.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode with magician Bill Abbott. Such a fun guy to talk to and such a fantastic magic creator and entertainer. If you guys are in the Nashville area later on this month, be sure to go to houseofcards.com, and I'm sure you can see Bill Abbott's schedule again in case you don't remember. But definitely, you want to check out his show. You definitely don't want to miss Bill Abbott. If you guys have not done so yet, be sure to click the follow button, subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform it is that you use to listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow and subscribe to the Abracadam podcast. Leave us a review. on Podbean or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. I want to hear your reviews. So if you've got something nice to say, especially, and if you do, I will give you a shout out right here on the podcast. And like always, abracadamits, thank you for listening.
Yes, awesome.
Please stop drinking vodka at my kid's birthday party!
Then you got a freaking miracle. There you go.